We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0 and he's... What a World Cup for Megan Rapinoe!
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair. Each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to part two of In the Know. Hope you guys enjoy this part where we answer your questions, and we're all very excited for the Pelicans to begin their games, and here's some content to steal you over until they start.
Okay, well, we can get started on some questions that some of the readers have submitted to us. Let me kick this off, and we'll start with one of my favorite topics. Can we expect Lonzo to be more aggressive? With him being fully healthy, do we see more drives and trying to get to the free throw line?
I'm a little confused by the more healthy part, because I feel like he looked pretty damn good right before the stoppage. So I feel like I would kind of tie this back to my prior comments around his strength, and if he really did add some muscle and the other work that he's clearly been putting in over the time off. I mean, I think he knows where he needs to really continue to develop, and I would hope to see some improvements there. I mean, any anything would be an improvement in that regard for him, because he's not really starting from a place of strength. But I don't know if I'm confident that we'll see a different, more aggressive Lonzo in this next 8 games or so. But it wouldn't shock me to see the numbers improve from where they were.
Well, that's what the clip of Gentry talking to him was saying, right? There is a clip at the Pelicans practice in the bubble where Gentry is watching Lonzo shoot free throws, and he is complimenting Lonzo's free throw form and how he's making them. He's like, you know, it doesn't get better than this. There's no reason you shouldn't be an 80% foul shooter. And then he said, with your dribble penetration, there's no reason you shouldn't be getting to the line 5 times a game. So that's your goal, 5 times a game at 80%, which would be incredible, because he is, I think, historically maybe the worst guard ever to get to the free throw line in terms of free throw rate and the amount of minutes he plays and relative to his usage. And so if he went from basically nothing to 5 times a game, which a lot of people felt like that was a realistic goal and that was a good encouragement by Gentry, then, you know, the Pelicans have themselves a really, really good player. And I think that would make the offense tremendously better. So he's been given his mandate from coaching staff, and I don't want to hear any Lonzo stan ever get in my mention and be like, well, Gentry just wants him to stand in the corner. No, you guys are complete idiots. The coaching staff wants him to do this stuff, and now you've heard it from the horse's mouth yourself. And I think it is also a reasonable expectation for Gentry to want him to drive more frequently and get to the free throw line 5 times a game. I think he can do it. He thinks he can physically do it. It remains to be seen if he will.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, you know, if Gentry wants to put him in positions like that, do you think the offense changes? I mean, do responsibilities change between him, Drew, and Ingram, and what they're asked to do? Or do you think they just kind of keep things right where they left off as much as they can?
No, I think people have this idea of like, oh, well, the coaching staff gets together and they figure out, well, this player's going to get this many shots, this player's going to get this many shots, and this player's going to do this. And with Alvin Gentry and his coaching staff, it could not be further from the truth. They have when people talk about egalitarian offenses, they have an extremely egalitarian offense. And basically, if you want it, it's yours for the taking. That's the way their offense functions. So if you want to be a person that wants to drive to the hoop more, like dominate the ball a little more, it's yours for the taking. And obviously, they encourage ball movement and pace and all that stuff. So as long as you're working within those constructs, there is no clearly defined, you know, you're going to get this many shots per game. Like, that just... It's not a thing. And so they've been asking, and I've had these conversations with the coaching staff, they've been asking Lonzo to drive all season long. It's entirely on Lonzo if he wants to do it, and Lonzo's found a way to be really effective by not doing it, and it's fine. I don't need him to be that kind of player. I think he fits really well with what the roster is right now, and I think he's playing really well as what I call a ceiling raiser rather than a floor raiser. If the Pelicans needed a floor raiser, then yes, I would want him to be on the ball more, attack the rim more, and do all these things. Now, if he develops that aspect of his game, that's going to be incredible. He's just going to be a better player. I've come to peace with the fact that if he never develops that aspect of his game, he could still be a really good player.
Makes sense. I think it's fair. I'm trying to see if there's any questions that tie into that topic and are good, like good segue. But what about I think we got a couple questions about Nikhil. So keeping with the Pelicans guard theme, and so asking about, you know, what we can expect from him. I think maybe some of the points around him growing 3/4 inch got people excited. Obviously, combining that with what we saw from him in summer league was not quite what we saw from him in the pros when the games counted. One, do you think that he's a guy who is going to get. I know we kind of already said that it's not, it's tough to predict what, who's going to get what minutes, but do you think, I guess my first question is, do you think Gentry's going to change the allocation of minutes that he was distributing between Nikhil and Frank Jackson?
I don't know. I feel like they love Frank a lot, and I don't see it. Even John Hollinger was, when he was previewing the Pelicans with Will Guillory in one of the Athletic articles that came out recently, was like, yeah, the Pelicans are knee-deep in quality guards in their guard rotation, and yet we would still see random Frank Jackson cameos. And I completely agree with that. There's no reason at this point. There's 8 games left, maybe a handful more if you make the playoffs. We've seen enough of Frank. He's not going to show you anything in this bubble that he hasn't shown you before.
Yep.
We know who he is. And at this point, if I'm a GM of the team, I'm telling the coach, there's no reason to play him at all. Just give those minutes to Nikhil if they're there. And that's how I feel about Nikhil. Now, the fact that Nikhil grew 3/4 of an inch, I could not care less. I need him to not take such erratic shots. I need him to be more controlled when he's trying to drive and play more like the player that he was in college and in summer league. So I think a lot of that was getting used to the speed of the NBA game and obviously nerves and wanting to make a good impression and not lose minutes. And so trying to do a lot, typical rookie problems. Hopefully with this time off and then playing in an environment where there are no fans will help Nikhil be more of a grounded player and make smarter decisions. And if that is, that is what I'm looking for in Orlando, really, is his decision-making and him just not playing like a spaz. But if that's if he gets minutes, right? And if he doesn't get minutes, I'm okay with that too, because the Pelicans have a bunch of quality guards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the, and this is always kind of just fluffy stuff and may not mean the damn thing, but the comment that he made about watching film of Manu, I thought that was pretty cool. And like, not, I don't know if that's a super intuitive guy to watch as an NBA player. And not, maybe not the first guy you think of, but I think it makes a lot of sense for him. And I thought that was, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what he envisions his role being at some point, then that's great, because, you know, that's an important role. And most people don't want to come off the bench and play like Manu. They want to be a starter. They want a max contract. And I'm sure Nikhil wants all that stuff too, but you know, if he's realistic about, like, you know, this is my high end outcome of being like one of the greatest shooting guards ever. I don't think that's Nikhil's ceiling at all. I think that's a bit unfair to say that, but if that's what his aspirations are, great. I like it. And I think someone in my Twitter mentions, said that Nikhil definitely has like the requisite cojones when it comes to shot taking and playmaking, that both drive the coaches mad, but kind of make them begrudgingly accept the risk taking because they get so good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you at all concerned thinking of it longer term around the ability to give him the minutes that he would need to develop? I mean, cause I'm just thinking about, you know, let's assume that Drew sticks with New Orleans. And also let's assume that Didi comes over next year. Is there a risk in stunting his development? Not to assume that he's going to be a super impactful player. I think the jury's still very much out on that, but I feel like there is at least some risk in that and making sure that he can develop the way they want him to.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a concern because of the quality of guards on this team. I do think what separates Nikhil from Josh Hart or Etuan or JJ or Didi is the fact that he can serve as your pseudo point guard, or essentially he can be your lead ball handler off the bench if he's not a full-time point guard. But I think he can be, and I think that's what they're kind of grooming him to be, is this backup decision maker. And I think because of that, that is the one skill none of these other guards have. He will get minutes.
I feel like I'm thinking back to like 2012, and when my head exploded when the Pelicans or the Hornets drafted Austin Rivers. And like, I think that was the intent of drafting him, was that he can be that type of guy you just described that they want Nikhil to be. Because obviously, him as a shooting guard just didn't, picking him that high never made any sense to me. But if you really truly believe that he could be like this combo guard and be a true like primary ball handler in some cases and distributor at some point, then maybe that pick can pan out. But I feel like it's similar to what you were just talking about with Nikhil. So that was pretty interesting corollary there.
Yeah, I think someone in our list of submitted questions asked if the Pelicans have. He says, "I have a feeling they have given up on him too soon," which I find that like a ridiculous assertion, because it's been 50 games into the season, yeah, and he's a rookie, and the team has a ton of guards. Drew, JJ, Lonzo, Etuan, Josh, you know, Frank, and then there's Nikhil. He's a rookie. He's at the bottom of the totem pole. So, you know, giving up on him too soon, I don't see it. I think they'll invest in him over the next couple of years, mm-hmm, for both purposes of getting the returns of him becoming a good player, but also boosting his value as a tradable piece.
Yep. Yeah, makes sense. Any others that you want to hit on next?
Yeah, I kind of like this one. How do you feel about the potential Lakers-Pelicans matchup with the loss of Avery Bradley and Rondo weakening their already thin guard rotation? And I like that question because we've been talking about the Pelicans guards for a little bit. But do you want to touch on that?
No, you go first.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers not having anyone to defend Drew Holiday or JJ, I don't know. I feel like that's a little bit overblown. I think with J.R. Smith and KCP and Danny Green, I think guys like Drew and JJ are going to get the requisite attention. And Lonzo, again, I don't expect him to be a threat in the half court. So in transition, it doesn't really matter who's guarding him. He's so good that he's going to find those passes in those lanes anyway, and it's really hard to defend transition. So that's not what I'm concerned about. But in a slower playoff environment, I don't think the loss of Avery Bradley or Rondo as point of attack defenders is going to hurt a guy that's not really a point of attacker. But with regards to Drew, like, yeah, maybe, I don't know. As far as like the Lakers offense goes, those guys to me, like, they were there to just maybe knock down shots and sometimes take over ball handling duties when LeBron wasn't on the floor. Like, is that going to make a difference in the playoffs? I doubt it, because LeBron's probably going to play close to 40 minutes a game and dictate every bit of offense possible. And really what it comes down to is, do the Pelicans have an answer for LeBron? And they don't. So I think the Pelicans can handle AD. Can they handle both LeBron and AD? Absolutely not. I don't think so. And that's what it comes down to. And so that's why I feel like the loss of Bradley and Rondo doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, so I think in the grand, if we're talking just the Pelicans series, I mean, I don't think anyone is naive enough to think the Pelicans can win that series. But I do feel like it matters for a couple reasons. One is that, you know, that's a taxing responsibility for LeBron. Whereas before, at least he had guys who could take that load off of him for a little bit. And I totally agree with your point that in the playoffs, he's going to be that guy for most of the game either way. But also his defense this year compared to like the year he took off last year has been much different. And so if you're asking him to do all that on both ends, he's superhuman. So it's not like I don't think he can get it done, but it is putting more of a responsibility and more taxing of a workload on him. When we saw a similar aspect with Drew to start the year, what he was asked to do guarding other teams' best players, as well as being a high usage player on the offensive end. So, I mean, I think it matters. Against the Pelicans, does it matter? Probably not really. I do think that it makes, maybe it gives the Pelicans more of an edge in the non-LeBron minutes. And so, you know, if when LeBron's off the floor, what happens? Who's handling the ball? Is it, I mean, what, Quinn Cook or KCP? I mean, like, I don't see anyone else as being Dion Waiters, I guess. I mean, it is interesting. I'm very curious what they do with
Caruso, the LeBron, buddy.
Yeah,
he's the goat.
Caruso apparently is good at everything then. But yeah, I that would be the one thing to me, and I think that the Lakers will have some time to figure it out. And again, what's Rondo's timeline? Couldn't he be back for the playoffs at some point?
I thought they said like 6 weeks.
Yeah, so if 6 weeks, and then he would probably miss the first round, maybe part of the second round, but yeah. So a lot of words to say that it probably doesn't matter that much, and I don't think it swings.
That's the thing, is like I don't think they were that good of players. I think Avery Bradley was important for their defense because he gives them someone to harass guards, but like I don't think he was that big of a difference maker to where. Yeah. Them losing him is going to change the outlook of their season in any meaningful way.
Yeah, I mean, if you're making the argument, it's the favors argument, right? It's the replacement value. And so you're saying that they have, but beyond LeBron, they have no one else who's even remotely capable of handling the ball in high-pressure situations, which if you're going to make that case, fine. Similar, and the corollary to favors is to say, like, you know, beyond him, they've got no one who can really be that interior – defender consistently, and Jackson Hayes is fine, but he's still a kid. I agree with you on both players. It's just a question of what's the difference between those players and the next man up.
Yep, I agree.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. And there's no better place to start than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Get in on the action for this week's big UFC fight, or check out odds on NASCAR, Formula One, and the Premier League. Can't wait for your team to come back? BetOnline has futures odds, including win totals, division winners, and even league championships. Or check out daily simulations of Madden and NBA 2K to watch and wager on. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Here's another question. Do you think Zillen is going to get minutes in scrimmages and or the short season? And then the follow-up question, which is not related to Zillen, is what does Drew's next contract look like for him to retire as a Pelican and make everything in the universe right?
the first question is I hope so. I mean, we talked earlier about Williams, and I think him being back and healthy negatively impacts Zillen's ability to get some minutes. But I think they're going to want to see a little bit of him at least as they get ready to play. But I don't see a clear pathway for him getting any real rotation minutes once the games start to matter.
Yeah, I think the idea of Zillen is this athletic combo forward who can defend multiple positions and provide rim protection and basically dunk everything into the sun. And he was even hitting threes when he was in the G League. So like the idea of him is great, and that kind of player fully realized is a perfect kind of player to kind of close games with Zion. But is Zillen that player? I don't think so, not at the NBA level. And I'm sure we'll see him in these next three scrimmages before the season starts back up. But I think if he's getting minutes, he's going to be one of those 20-20 players where he gets minutes if you're up 20 or down 20.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Drew question is so – or not specifically to Drew, but just contracts in general right now. Maybe you have a better gauge on it than I do, but I have no idea how to predict anything right now. And especially with, we don't know what next year, how many games they're going to play, what that looks like. And just like the salary cap outlook is just so unknown that I don't know how to evaluate it. Is there something you feel like you can say with a relative degree of certainty on that question?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think that the plan is to do a bit of cap smoothing and to minimize the drop in it. I think what they want to do is hold the cap at this year's value rather than dropping it down significantly to whatever the revenue dictates it should be. And I think they're planning on doing that for any number of years, or slowly reducing it for any number of years till things are right in the world again. But, you know, you can never say that with any kind of certainty, because it just takes like one screw up. Or one event to change all of that. But with regards to Drew, I mean, it would be amazing if he finished his career out as a Pelican, because he's already contributed so much to the team and to the city. And, you know, most recently he and his family announced that they're donating around $5.3 million to the local communities in New Orleans and Compton and Indianapolis, and basically furthering black owned businesses and HBCUs and other black social services. And that, you know, that to give up that amount of money is just, it just shows like what an incredible human being he is. And I want that guy on my team forever. So I think, I really do think the Pelicans should look into extending him. And I frankly feel like that is the most likely outcome with regards to what happens to Drew when it comes to trading him or letting him walk whenever his contract is up. I think they will probably at the end of the season come to an agreement with some sort of extension now. But like you said, I have no idea what that even looks like at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you all the way on that. And even the trade outlook, if they were going to try to move him and get some different pieces for him. If the Lonzo stands had their way, that would have already happened. But yeah, I would love to see Jrue Holiday retire as a member of this team. I think everything he does, and like, I feel like my perspective in the last few months has changed on this to be a little less give a shit about basketball. And like, there are just so many things that are more important. And like, and I'm not saying you overpay Jrue Holiday because of what he brings to the team off the floor and the kind of person he is, but I'm also not saying that shouldn't be a consideration in his next contract. And so like, I mean, the guy is fantastic. He's a true ambassador for the city of New Orleans now. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's important, especially for a small market, like an NBA city, like New Orleans is. And so I would not be at all upset if that was a move that they made.
Yep. I agree. Here are some questions from Tejeda, who always has a good list of questions. So first question is, thoughts on the Pels charging season ticket holders for next year's season tickets, even though there's not a direct plan for how that season will go?
I don't like it. I think it's kind of shady. And this isn't to say that they're obviously going to fully refund people for any games that are missed or give credit for, I think they should just fully refund the money or give them the option to get their money back or put it towards future games. But I don't think it's the right way to do business in this uncertain environment. Like, you can make the argument that money is penciled for discretionary income, but I think it's a shitty argument, and it should be, you know, that people need their disposable income right now more than ever. And I think, you know, putting that, I think they should be putting all those payments on hold, to just pretty bluntly. And I don't like that. And I don't know what other teams around the league are doing, but I also don't really know if it matters.
Yeah. The right thing to do here is get people their money back, because this is, I don't agree with their plan. Like you said, I think it's anti-consumer. And I think, especially as being a participant and not even a participant, but a leader in this community that the Pelicans are, they should be acutely aware of this community's need with regards to finances. And I don't think you can say that this money was penciled away for discretionary income, because circumstances have changed so drastically. So what may have been penciled away initially is definitely doesn't mean that is the case here. Now, I think it's a different situation with the corporate season ticket plans that they have sold. And, you know, if that was the vast majority of things and that's what they're making their decision on, that's a separate conversation. But I don't think that's the case, because it's the everyday worker that's really hurt here. And even if it was the corporate stuff, just give the money back, right? You guys are a $1 billion team. Just give the money back.
Yep.
It's pretty simple. Question number two, if or when the Pelicans win it all, what moment would you guys start the championship documentary with? Ooh, that's a good question.
So, like, this is asking about, like, what the referendum, or, like, what point in the season, or asking when we would start it, like, actually how long after the season concludes. It's the latter, right?
No, I think just, like, you know, you're making a film, and you want to open the film up with, like, a scene. And so, like, what moment in Pel's history what scene would that be?
Huh, that's okay. So that was not my interpretation. Now I got to think about it, but that's a way better question. I'm thinking, do you have a gut answer on this?
I think it would be like an Anthony Davis trade request press conference, like that, the first one, where he was saying, like, I don't regret this, and, you know, just trying to do what I can to be the most dominant player. I don't know. So whatever that crap was, so that bullshit press conference he gave the first time we talked to him after his trade request. And then just like interlace it with cuts of him being at the All-Star game talking about like, maybe started with the Rich Paul walking him out of the game early.
And you end it with the "that's all" after the confetti comes down. You end it with "that's all, folks," right?
Yeah, yeah. But like interlace it with like footage of him at the All-Star game, like going on every media thing, like, "Oh yeah, all 29 teams are on my list. All 30 teams are on my list," and that all that crap, and then you know just subtly place ruffles. This is gonna be a very petty documentary.
I was gonna say I almost feel like we're starting it on a negative note, and I don't know if that's the way to go. Like I feel like it's got to be something related to Zion, but
yeah, I mean it'd be that, or it'd be like the Pels winning the lottery and Alvin Gentry just being like, "Fuck yeah!"
I think that they would want to do something around, and I fully am with you. You got to weave in the AD stuff somewhere. I don't know if you kick it off with that, and I think it's probably, and you want to just like, I don't know if you want to do the lottery either, because I don't know if you want to make the foundation of the documentary about luck, and I think you want to make it more about like the journey and the work that went into it. And so
maybe the draft. I don't know. Zion saying "Let's Dance." The documentary is going to be called "Let's Dance." I mean, come on. There's no better title than that.
Yeah, that's probably right. But yeah, like, what a great question. Okay. Yeah, and I hope listeners send in their thoughts. You know, sometimes I feel like we don't do a good enough job sometimes of like.
This seems like a Jake question. Jake, this is up Jake's wheelhouse.
Definitely so. And like, but even like, I feel like we should be soliciting feedback on these questions as well, not just our answers. We want to hear what other people think too. It's a great, great question. I want you to go first on this last one because this is your wheelhouse.
Absolutely. Yes. The answer is yes. Okay. So the question is yes or no chips on a sandwich. And the answer is yes. I don't think that's even a question. I mean, like, they add flavor, they add texture, they add a crunch, they add salt. You know, that's yes.
I agree. I'm not saying I do it often, but I have no reason to be opposed to it. I have a couple follow-up questions on this. One, would you consider like chip crumbles, or does it have to be full potato chips?
I don't care.
Okay. Second is chips only sandwich. Like chips and then like condiments.
Gross.
I just wanted to see how far you go.
I just thought of train. Like, you know, like you get two slices of bread and then you get like your French onion dip and then you lather it on both slices and then you put in a bunch of Ruffles. I mean, it might taste
Ruffles. Good. Come on. Come on. That's, I guess that's AD's favorite sandwich.
Come on. Ruffle, like, you know, I will say to AD, Ruffles somehow just taste better to me when I'm dipping them with condiments than, I don't know, Lay's. But yes, you get your French onion dip, you lather on both slices, put in a bunch of Ruffles, and then you make a sandwich out of it. I mean, it probably wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but definitely gross.
Where does it rate on the scale of ramen pizza to 10?
I mean, ramen pizza is 10, so I don't know what kind of scale you're talking about.
Oh, man. All right, moving on. I'm trying to see what else we got here. This is fun. Most probable closing lineup if Zion doesn't come back.
I think Favors and JJ closing, along with Drew, Lonzo, and Ingram. I just think that's their most played lineup, their most comfortable lineup. There's enough shooting there, and defense, you just got to hope it works.
Yeah. I think that's right. Is there a scenario you would say Melly instead of JJ, or do you find a significant part of Melly's value is tied to Zion?
I do feel like Melly's value is tied to Zion a lot, but maybe I'm underselling Melly and his improvements he's made after getting healthy. But I feel like teams respect JJ a lot more mm-hmm. on the 3-point line, so there's going to be more spacing, and I think the Pelicans have historically had more offensive problems closing the game, so I'm going with JJ.
Yeah, the only I think honestly I would go with it. I think I mean Redick's the answer that I think is probably best, but I would almost go with Hart before I would go with Melly in a lot of situations.
Oh, I forgot about Hart. Yeah, you know what? I think it's Hart before JJ.
Situationally, I could see it.
Yeah, I think if you need a bucket, like if it's one of those timeouts, like you're subbing Favors off and you're putting Melly and JJ in, I think that's what's going to happen. Or you not even put Melly in, you just put Hart and JJ in, and it's like Ingram at center.
That's an adventure.
But that's if you need a bucket.
Yeah.
You know, but I think on balance, I think Hart closes the game. You're right.
Yeah. I'm not sure what else we got in the way of – I mean, there's some draft stuff, but I always leave that to you. So if you – there's a couple, like, around so let's take this one. Is there anyone in this draft who you would use a future asset to move up and get? Let's put the top guys off to the side on this one, but anyone that you would do that for?
I just hate this draft. I really do. I hate this draft. I want to get rid of our pick. And I'm cool. I've spent a lot of time researching this draft, and I'm going to spend a lot of words on this draft, and then a lot of words on drafts in general. And my idea with this draft is that it sucks. And I mean, I would use an asset to move up to grab a guy I loved. I don't know who that guy is. I don't love any guy, but if I'm the Pelicans, if theoretically there was a guy that I loved and this is the guy I want to be with my core, I would not hesitate to include an asset to go get that guy to make sure I had that guy. I think, depending on the price, I would happily move up for Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball or Killian Hayes, but I think the price is not going to be worth it. Because while these are the best players in the draft, there is no guarantee these are ever going to be star level contributors.
Reasonable. I got a couple other topics we can hit on, are there any other questions that we've missed that you wanted to get to?
I don't think so.
Okay. So I have one question and then I think one or two other topics. So who's been your favorite player to follow on the Pelicans during this bubble situation? Like just social media wise.
Probably JJ or Josh Hart. I mean, they've been the most active, so it's a little bit of an easy answer. As far as like guys that aren't posting their own material, the favorite guy like for me to look out for in practice and those kind of videos has been Jackson Hayes. I am unhealthily invested in that kid's success and I'm excited to see how he develops, and I think he can be really good, so I'm excited to see how that works out.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was you who shared or someone else, and this is not Pelicans related, but the Sixers player, the rookie who was who basically cut that video about life in the bubble. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, he has 3 episodes out, dude.
Really?
Yeah, he's posting them regularly, and it's tremendous content. It's Matisse Thybulle, and he is a really gifted filmmaker, it turns out, but he's cutting, editing, documenting all this himself, and it is an amazing look, and they're really funny,
too.
Yeah, he has 3 episodes out. Check them out. And he's putting them on YouTube as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think he cut the first one, and then I got a dog, and then like I haven't followed so in the past week. I'm definitely gonna check that out. The other thing I thought we could talk about that was more recent was the award situation. It got publicized yesterday that the league has decided. I don't know what the deal is for all NBA teams. I think that I haven't seen confirmation of that, but we know now that Rookie of the Year, MVP, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man, all these awards are not going to include the last 8 games of the season, but the stats will count towards normal regular season stats. And I have some thoughts around this, and I wanted to see what if you had an opinion on it.
Yeah, so my opinion is that because of this new rule, the rookie of the year is Nicolò Melli. And I think Giannis is the MVP. And I think defensive player of the year is also Giannis. And I don't think the Lakers should get any awards ever. And I don't know. I mean, like, I think the NBA's reasoning behind it was a little thin. This idea that other teams don't have, fairly get to participate. I mean, like, what are those guys in the running for anyway? Like,
I think it's Graham. That's the only guy. Like, I was trying to think of all different awards, and like maybe Graham for most improved player.
Yeah. Like, but okay,
that's it. Yeah, exactly. It's so silly.
Yeah. So that's about it. But you know, if that's, they want to give Ja Morant his perfect attendance award, that's good for him. And
perfect attendance award, that's awesome.
And yeah, that's how I feel about it. And, you know, good for him, good for that.
Yeah, it bothers me too. And I don't even think the rookie of the year stuff is like top of mind. Like, I feel like you can make the case. I think you could have made a case for Zion if the regular season had played out, if the Pelicans made the playoffs, like all 82 games, like maybe he could have got close enough to be at least a conversation. But when in 8 games, I didn't see it any way Zion could steal it reasonably. I mean, voters will do what voters are going to do. But like, I felt like stuff like sixth man of the year and most improved player was, that stuff's, I think it's certainly still up for grabs. And I think it's kind of silly to eliminate the, if you're going to count the stats, then it's part of the awards. I think that's pretty simple to me. I thought it would have been really fun. Well, not really fun, but like something I thought about yesterday was creating some silly awards for like this, just the bubble games. And so if you want to cut it at the end of March, then create some silly like MVP award or a couple other ones that like, you know, media companies will latch onto, or like, you know, like a MVP ladder for these 8 games. You'll have someone completely out of left field in the running for this. I think the overall silliness of who could end up winning it because of who's going to be playing all 8 games as hard as you can so it's probably James Harden, I guess. I just talked myself into that. But anyway.
No, you need to get more creative with them. Most snitch hotline calls. Days yeah, spent quarantining. You know, most beers shotgunned. You need to get way more creative with the bubble awards. It's like, we could do our own bubble award show.
Yeah, this is like yearbook superlatives here. This is great.
Yeah, basically.
Anything else we haven't hit on in terms of recent, recent news around the league? I feel like we've done most of it. You've been sharing. I thank you for this. You've done a really good job sharing the videos that the Pelicans have sent out of practices in the bubble. Has there been anything that's really caught your eye so far from what you've seen? Outside of anything we've talked about in the podcast so far?
It's really hard to say because first of all, I want to shout out the Pelicans for doing a really good job of putting all this together and providing the media with this. I think it is a really big step up from how their social media and PR team has been in the past. And so that's been awesome. But I think that trying to take away anything from these videos is asking yourself to be disappointed, because one, it's practice; two, it's a super cut of them just making buckets and not their misses at all. So
point guard Jackson Hayes though.
But I think that, I mean, I think it's exciting to watch, and it's the most basketball content I've watched in months. And yeah, I mean, I think that if I go by these videos, I don't think Etuan Moore is going to miss a shot ever. And the Pelicans are going to win every game.
And I thought that before, so that's not really a change.
Well, then you should be happy with everything that's going on.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think this is a good place to call it, and we'll probably reconvene when the games start back up, or the scrimmage to start back up, or if and when there's exciting news.
Yeah, looking forward to over scrutinizing the scrimmages instead of the practice videos. It should be fun.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks for listening, folks.
PenFed, that's a fact.
I have PenFed, that's a fact.
My credit card purchases get me cash back.
My credit card purchases get me cash back.
No one else gets these rewards.
Sergeant, that is just plain untrue.
What in tarnation?
Sir, PenFed's PowerCash Rewards card isn't just for military members. Anyone can get cash back on all purchases.
Ah, figgins! You've ruined my favorite song.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/PowerCash. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.